Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
HW News Network has entered into a partnership with ITV Gold, that is a 33-year-old 24/7 TV channel in the United States, where anchor Aditi Lamba has interviewed Congress leader and Member of Parliament Shashi Tharoor. In the course of interview, Tharoor had spoken about his association with the Indian National Congress, his views on the recent Kerala flood incident, and also his preparations for the upcoming 2019 general elections. Let us hear what he has to say.
Hello everyone, you are watching ITV Gold and I'm your host Aditi Lamba. On the show today, it's an honor and privilege for us to have an author, a politician, an international formal diplomat, someone who is one of the biggest faces of modern India and a huge voice for the Indian youth. On the show today, we have Mr. Shashi Tharoor, currently the second term member of the Indian Parliament. He does represent the Trivandrum constituency from Kerala and right now he's with us on ITV Gold. Mr. Tharoor, it's an honor and a privilege to have you here with us.
Good to meet you. Thank you.
It's amazing to have you here right now. And before I even start this interview, you've been very vocal about your support to the Kerala community post all of the floods and the disasters that have happened, even with your hashtag Proud to be Malayali. So I would just like to take this moment for you to sort of reach out to the audience, especially to the Indian Malayali community, and just give your words of support and encouragement and anything that you want the NRI community to help right now with.
Sure. Well, the immediate crisis is now over. But I guess you could anathemize the whole thing in four R's. The first was rescue. There was an urgent need to actually save people who were marooned on tops of their houses.
Right.
There'd been an extensive crisis of flooding in about 7 or 8 of our 14 districts.
Yes.
And many people were in dire straits. We had, fortunately, the Navy coming in, Army helicopters, the Coast Guard, and even ordinary fishermen, people who basically live below the poverty line, came out in their boats and saved people's lives. It was extraordinary.
Right.
The second R was relief. That was done pretty well by the state government and the district administrations, the network of collectors, and ordinary people, again, chipping in with their support. A school holiday was declared, and the result was that the schools were converted to refugee camps. So you didn't need to build separate camps. People were sleeping in classrooms while they couldn't get back to their homes.
Wow.
The third R is the risk of disease. Much of that has been controlled, but there are some problems. There was a big worry about cholera. That didn't happen because I guess Keralites were smart enough or educated enough not to drink contaminated water.
Yes.
So there's been no major outbreak of that kind of problem. But there is, unfortunately, a severe risk of an illness called leptospirosis, which comes from standing in the water because the contaminants in the water, mainly rodents, urine, and so on, come in through your mucous membranes and affect your kidneys and lungs. And 7 people have died, 149 in hospital. So it's still a fairly serious issue. And finally, we have the rebuilding and reconstruction challenge, which is enormous because the damage has been extensive. Mm-hmm. 50,000 homes have been destroyed or damaged. 39 bridges are down. 80,000 kilometers of roads were damaged.
Quite a devastation.
All of this, really decades of infrastructure built up in Kerala, will now have to be rebuilt. And that, I'm sorry to say, is what now looms ahead for many years to come.
Wow.
So how can people help? Mm-hmm. I think the kind of relief assistance is now tapering off. There's less need for that. But assistance to help rebuild and reconstruct would always be welcome. And I think giving aid to the Chief Minister's Relief Fund or to respected and trusted NGOs who are working out there is something that all of us anywhere in the world can do. And I hope that people watching your show will do it too.
How has dealing with this, representing Kerala, and you know, with all of the work you've done with the United Nations, with the previous governments in India, how has this experience been for you while you're dealing with these current situations, personally?
Well, in the current situation, I have to admit that because my party is not in power, mm-hmm. either in Kerala or in Delhi,
right.
I don't have any executive responsibility. The best I can do is speak, bring attention to the problem. I went to Geneva and met with the UN humanitarian agencies and got their advice.
Right.
And I've been seeing the chief minister of Kerala quite regularly and briefing him on my insights and ideas. And I must say he's been very attentive and very grateful for whatever help I could give. I'm also, frankly, a strong critic of the central government's decision not to accept any international assistance. Mm-hmm. I feel that's petty. If the central government cannot give the people of Kerala all that they need to rebuild what could easily be
right.
15, 20, 30 years of built-up infrastructure, then they should allow the rest of the world to chip in where countries are willing to do so. I agree India need not go out with a begging bowl,
right.
but where people volunteer to help, mm-hmm. no country claims to be too proud to turn them away. The US accepted help when Katrina happened.
Right.
I remember the Indian government sending $5 million to the US, and the US didn't say, oh, we're too important to accept that.
Exactly.
So I think the attitude of the Indian government needs to be changed.
And just talking a little bit more about the Indian government, as you just brought it up, you have been very vocal about your stand against the central government, and now we are looking at the Indian government having their elections next year. This year, your voice for Congress Party has been very, very vocal. You are someone that has been looked at as someone to be trusted in the Congress Party.
Thank you.
When you are now looking at what's happening in the government, when you are unhappy with certain decisions that are impacting the constituencies that you're working with, what is going to be your role in the next coming months, as well as when you reflect on these issues with the central government? How important is it right now for you to campaign for your voice now that we're going into 2019?
Well, obviously, I will be campaigning pretty much full time from the
right.
time I get back at the end of this week, this weekend. Largely because there's no question in my mind and in the minds of everybody else who cares about India that the future of the country will be very severely impacted by the decisions made by the voters in the next election.
Right.
We have seen, sadly, an attempt to transform in many ways the nature of our country by a government which has unleashed or at least condoned a number of forces of bigotry and intolerance that should have no place in our society. We have seen the onset of phenomena that we hardly were conscious of before,
right.
of the so-called Gau Rakshaks, the cow vigilantes, the mob lynchings.
Yes.
These are kinds of episodes that have shaken many people's faith in the Indian Republican and the Indian secular democratic experiment to the core. And I think that we do need to stand up for decency and human values in our society. On top of that, this government was elected because it talked a good game economically, but has not been able to deliver. Economic growth has slowed down. Jobs have not been created. We are seeing agriculture in a state of great distress, farmer suicides going up. We're looking at exports stagnating, manufacturing going down. It's a really unrelieved picture of gloom around. And one turns to one's voters and says, have Achhe Din come for you? The good days that were promised by this government. And if they haven't come, why do they deserve a second chance?
I would just like for you to reflect on this huge concept of, you know, India, Pakistan, and the Muslim population, and how they sometimes do get marginalized in India. You've been very vocal about this, and that's one of the biggest reasons Congress supporters have come up to you on that. I would just like for you to just give us a little bit of insight into that big concept.
There are two different issues. India, Pakistan is a relationship between two states. India and Indians Muslims are a question within our own society. India's Muslims are not Pakistanis, they're Indians.
Right.
And they have the rights of Indians and they should be allowed to flourish in our society just as anybody else of Hindu or Christian or any other faith.
Right.
But India, Pakistan, the problem unfortunately goes to the very nature of the Pakistani state. You see, in India, the state has an army. Right. In Pakistan, the army has a state.
The state, yes.
And the army controls pretty much everything there is in that society, including its government. They ran the country directly with a number of military coups for 32 years, but they also ran the country indirectly when they weren't directly in power, by controlling how much the civilian government could do and not do, and by curbing the rights of the civilian government to actually make peace with India. Every time the civilian governments of the day engaged in a peaceful process with India, the military
right.
and their pet jihadis were unleashed to stop it.
Yeah.
So Mr. Vajpayee took a bus trip to Lahore in 1999. Within a few months, the attack on Kargil followed.
They did.
We had the issue of the peace talks in Agra. Within a few months, the attack on the Indian Parliament followed. We had a warm and peaceful attempt at dialogue between Mr. Zardari's government and the government of Dr. Manmohan Singh, and then 2611 followed. So every time that peace has been attempted, somebody in Pakistan has had a veto on it through the use of terror as an instrument of their designs. And to my mind, that is a problem that can only be solved within Pakistan. Until and unless the people of Pakistan ensure that the military's malign influence is
right.
curbed, we are doomed, I'm sorry to say, to a series of this kind of unpleasant and unfortunate developments. So that's on the India-Pakistan front. I think people in India want peace because they want to get on with the job of development.
Exactly.
But Pakistan is the only country that can give us peace. And all the civilian leaders who want to do that are frustrated and thwarted by the military's control of that society. There is no army anywhere in the world, in any country,
right.
that controls a greater share of that country's GDP than Pakistan's army does, or that country's government budget than Pakistan's army does. In these circumstances, I think we have a real challenge. Indians and Pakistanis usually get along very well. You see in a place like the US
yes.
that they're the best of friends, because mm-hmm. between the people themselves, they're far more in common than what divides us. What divides us is nothing more than the unpleasant ambitions of the Pakistani military. And that's the real challenge. Now, when it comes to the question of India's Muslims,
right.
that's a different issue, because they are a disproportionately poor section of society. Essentially, the thriving, educated, professional middle classes emigrated at the time of partition or soon
right.
thereafter to mm-hmm. Pakistan, leaving the Muslim community disproportionate in the sense that you only had the elite, the Nawabs, as it were, the extremely
right.
affluent,
mm-hmm.
Feudal almost families, and the very poor. And the middle class was just much smaller than the middle class of any other community. That has created its own problems, but we cannot afford to have a society in which one community is disproportionately represented in the prison population and not adequately represented in the police. So it seems to me we need to actually have much more by way of affirmative action to encourage opportunities for Muslim Indians to participate in the great adventure of Indian democracy and development. This is where the bigotry that the government is promoting is so unfortunate, because honestly, to see the Muslims as somehow the source of a problem is absurd when, as we know from the work of the Sachar Commission,
right.
They are actually amongst the least privileged, poorest, most unfortunate sections of our society. And for that reason, it seems to me very necessary
right.
that we should move to a politics of inclusion rather than the kind of demonization we've seen from some unpleasant elements who have been unleashed in the recent years.
Would inclusion and inclusion of the Muslim community be a huge aspect of the elections next year, especially for the National Congress Party, according
to you? I think
it's
going to be one of the issues, but not the only issue.
Okay.
Because we're also conscious that the BJP wants to polarize the electorate.
Yes.
And part of the problem is, I mean, we know that the minority communities know that our heart is in the right place as far as they're concerned. But the BJP wants to sort of try and make the argument that these people are only interested in the minorities and they're not standing up for the interests of the majority in
mm-hmm.
the hope of polarizing the majority of voters to support them. So I think it's equally important that we hammer away at the economic failures, the misgovernance, the mismanagement
mm-hmm.
that has been such a feature of the BJP.
We are running out of time right now as being signaling. I just have two last questions for you, and feel free to combine them. One is, I would really like for you to comment on what you thought of the striking of Section 377, because you were one of the most vocal politicians about it. And I personally, as an Indian American, thought it was a great moment of honor for me, because I'm still an Indian citizen. And also, with that in mind, with what you felt during that time, what is your hope for India? Just yours.
Well, on 377, I think it was an injustice that needed to be rectified. I think it's wrong that a section of our citizenry should be deprived of the rights that the rest of us take for granted. It seems to me the government has no place in the bedroom, and the government has no place stigmatizing and even criminalizing a certain section of people because of the way in which nature or God made them. And it seems to me that this is wrong, and I'm very glad that finally the Supreme Court woke up and read down the law. On the question of what I wish for India, I wish for India a number of things. I certainly wish for India progress and prosperity for all its people. And by that, I don't mean that we have to be tomorrow's China or whatever. I mean that every Indian should be able to have three decent square meals a day,
yes,
a roof over their head, mm-hmm, a decent school to send their children to, a healthcare center within a few kilometers of their place of work and life, a decent professional expectation, and the ability to dreams for a better future for themselves and their children. This is what every human being wants.
Right.
And I want my country to be able to guarantee that to all its citizens. Secondly, I want India to be secure. There are people around who unfortunately wish us harm,
yes,
and we have to be strong and resistant to it. Third, I wish India to be a country that in many ways sets an example to the rest of the world. Our democracy was an example to the rest of the world. Even a poor country could empower all its people, give them the vote, give them the capacity to determine their own political destiny. That's great. But equally, we should set an example of being a country where people of diverse backgrounds can live together in coexistence and harmony, not being attacked for the mark on a forehead or the absence of a foreskin, not being lynched because of the profession they're practicing or the caste they belong to, and not being attacked or stigmatized because of the food they like to eat. And this kind of thing really has to change. And if we can come back to the India that our founding fathers fought to free,
yeah,
the India of freedom that Mahatma Gandhi, Jawaharlal Nehru, Maulana Azad, Dr. Ambedkar, they all envisaged an India where the individual would be free and society would be free, that would be a great example to set the rest of the world as well.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Mr. Tharoor. Any last-minute messages to all of the 3-point-something million Indian-Americans that are staying in this country? The camera is yours.
Well, I hope that the Indian-American community will continue to take an interest in India, follow what's going on back home, be informed, be supportive. And you can certainly give your contributions where they're needed, as in the case of a natural disaster like the Kerala floods. But equally important, you must give your interest, your sympathy, your good wishes, and come and visit often, put your feet on the soil of the motherland, and put your energies and your good wishes where those feet are. I think that I wrote in one of my books a long time ago, does NRI stand for not really Indian or never relinquished India? And I argued that there was a little bit of both today. Today I'd go beyond that, and I'd say, you know, you're much more, you really are the national reserve of India. And as India's national reserve, there's a lot you can do for us that I hope you will continue doing. Stay involved, keep it up, and wish you all success and prosperity in America where you've chosen to live, but also through your success, make us happy and proud.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tharoor.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. costs. Insulate your home and save on energy costs. Owens Corning Pink Foamular Insulation Panels are moisture resistant and can be used anywhere, including walls, attics, and basements. Foamular Insulation Panels are available in multiple sizes to fit your project. Visit Menards.com to shop all foam board insulation. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for great deals happening this week. Save.